WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
In America, you get food deep. Won't have to run through the jungle and scuff up your feet. You just sing about Jesus and drink wine all day. It's great to be an American.
That's Randy Newman singing one of his best-known songs. It's included on his new 4-CD box set, Guilty, 30 Years of Randy Newman. It collects his studio recordings, including such classics as Davy the Fat Boy, Lonely at the Top, Political Science, Rednecks, and Short People. It also features demos and other previously unreleased tracks, and his scores from such films as Ragtime, The Natural, Parenthood, and Toy Story. Randy Newman, welcome back to Fresh Air.
It's good to be here.
I want to focus on that third CD, the CD of mostly demos and previously unreleased material. The first song on that CD is called Golden Gridiron Boy. And this is a song about not getting the girls and not being a football hero. How did you write this song?
I don't know. It sounds like I wrote it with my foot now, but I was 18. Actually, I got it wrong. It should have been Gridiron Golden Boy. I mean, that's the way I wrote it, but I must have got flustered at the recording session. And I think Lenny Warnker called me and says, oh, boy, why don't you write a song? I was started writing songs when I was like 16, and it was football season, and he was a giant football fan, and I was a football fan. He said, you know, why don't you write a football song? As if it were... the last one I think was the Desi Arnaz movie, which was like 30 years before anyway, I mean, as if it were in a completely archaic form in the first place. Besides, you know, the nerd doesn't end up getting the girl or anything. It's a very strange effort.
Speaking of strange, this record was produced by Pat Boone. How did you get hooked up with Pat Boone?
My father was a doctor, and Pat Boone was a patient, and he heard me sing, and was one of the first people actually to like the way I sung, you know, so I'm forever grateful to him.
Now, did you think of yourself as needing to make a good, clean, fun Pat Boone kind of record?
No, I didn't think anything. I said, there it was, and they got an arranger, and I went in there, and they had this silly cheering on it. I don't know if I thought it was silly at the time. I would hope so.
Well, let's hear Golden Gridiron Boy. Do you want to say anything else about it before we spin it?
No, I'll say what I said in the liner notes of the box set. Love means never having to say you're sorry.
Okay. This is Randy Newman, recorded in 1962.
In his football uniform, he looks 10 feet tall. All the girls run after him. And my girl's in front of them all. 'Cause he's a football hero.
Hero.
She's in love with him.
Yeah, yeah.
In every game it's still the same. She talks nothing but him.
Hooray.
Oh, when he makes a touchdown. Cheers of the crowd. One day she'll see what she means to me, and I know that she'll be proud. Yeah, I'm too small to make the team. I can only play in the band, but I'm big enough to have a dream that one day she'll understand that he just loves the glory. That's all he'll ever enjoy. Golden Gridiron.
Randy Newman, did you expect that to be a hit?
No, I didn't. I don't think I did.
And you were right.
I was right, yeah. I almost never have. All it's been is like a skeleton in the closet. But, you know, it's a very sad song when I really listen to it, you know. The guy, I'm too small to make the team, wow.
I can only play in the band.
Quite an admission, yeah.
No.
Didn't exactly have my finger on the pulse of the American public's desire for heroes, you know.
So did this experience discourage you since nothing happened with the record, or did it encourage you because at least you got a record
made? I knew it was an aberration. I hadn't planned on having a career as a singer in any way. And for a while thereafter, I just wrote, and that's what I thought I do, and then maybe vaguely I thought I'd do movies someday like my uncles did. I still kept studying music. So I don't remember it as being, you know, very important to me. There's nothing less important than a record you put out that disappears in a half a day, you know. I mean, and I don't remember waiting, oh boy, you know, this could be, you know, I could go on one of those Dick Clark tours. I didn't think of it that way.
So you weren't expecting to be a singer, but you were hoping to be a songwriter. You were a songwriter.
I was.
You were writing for a publishing company.
That I was.
What was your image of a songwriter back then? This was a kind of transitional period in the early 60s. You know, you're past Tin Pan Alley. You're kind of in the end of the Lieber and Stoller era. And right at the kind of dawn of the period where bands were going to be writing their own songs.
The image that I cherish and love... is the image of it, I don't know whether you would remember, was like, I remember Donald O'Connor and Sid Fields, I think they used to play this song right here, and they'd, listen to this. Jimmy Cagney had a movie like that once, except he was a writer, I can't think it was, with Pat O'Brien. I loved the idea of these two guys getting all excited about some, you know, Korean War song or something. The image I had was that ancient motion picture image of Tin Pan Alley and you know, two guys hammering it out. And it was also of Carol King and Jerry Goffin and Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil and the people who were very successful contemporaneously with my attempts to write songs for people.
Randy Newman is my guest, and he has a new box set called Guilty, 30 Years of Randy Newman. I want to get to another track from the third CD on your 4-CD box set, and this is the CD of demos and other mostly previously unreleased material. This is a song called Love is Blind, which is, you know, just as the first song that we heard, Golden Gridiron Boy, is very out of character for you, this kind of cheerful, well, not cheerful,
no,
but,
cheerful,
an upbeat football song.
It's a generic lyric.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
That's what it is.
Right. You say in the notes that you wrote it when you were 18.
Yeah.
So you were 18 and already writing that love is bitter, love is hopeless, love is blind. It leads me to think that you already had a sense of your self as writing more dark and cynical songs than your average songwriter.
Well, there are some pretty lugubrious love songs, you know. I mean, a lot of them are pretty bleak, you know, he stopped loving her today and a lot of country things. But... I was a pretty down cat, I guess. I don't know.
Well, let's hear the song Love is Blind, written in about 1962. The recording we'll hear is 1968. And this is from Randy Newman's box set, Guilty, 30 Years of Randy Newman.
They say that love's a sweet thing, and for lovers the sun will always shine. But in spite of what they say, I think of love this way. Love is bitter, love is hopeless, love is blind. I learned the hard and lonely way. Love can't last. I spent 1,000 empty yesterday, hiding behind a veil of tears. Now poets me write about love. And wise men may sing his praise, but I'll always remember as I go through the empty day. Love is bitter, love is hopeless, love is blind.
Love is Blind, one of the demos on Randy Newman's box set, Guilty. What were you saying there?
I was laughing at the ending. You know, I was just sort of aimless wandering. You know, in the motion picture movie business, we call it grazing. You know, it's just like, you know, I was waiting to end it. I know where I should have gone, but I didn't go there. It made me laugh.
Well, that was a demo. Did you ever record it other than that for yourself?
No, I never thought enough of it.
Well, I like it a lot. Why don't you?
Yeah,
like
I do
it?
Too.
Okay.
Oh, Veil of Tears.
Well,
things
sure.
Things like that. I mean, I grew to not be able to stand that stuff coming from myself. I mean, I'll listen to records and love them, and they'll have lyrics like that in them, but I can't do it. You know, it's like if you know better. Don't do it.
I just figured I could put kind of like little quotes around the Veil of Tears and say, oh, that's a little tip of the hat to the genre.
Well, that's being too kind. I mean, it's just, you know, none of it was heartfelt in that, you know, I don't think I'd been in love with anybody. You know, I certainly didn't have all these sophisticated, you know, it's bitter and blind at 18, you know.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I hope not. I just didn't think of recording. I like it too. I like every word goes. The harmonic, you know, structure of it. I mean, it sounds like me. It's what I do today.
My guest is Randy Newman. His new box set is called Guilty. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Randy Newman, and he has a new 4-CD box set called Guilty, 30 Years of Randy Newman. Now, when you started to think of yourself as a singer who could do the songs that you were writing, how did it change your songwriting?
Oh, that's really a good question. I think it made it more difficult because I was stricter about what I would say. Now, Veil of Tears, I'd have been happy if, you know, Neil Diamond had recorded it or you know, somebody else had recorded it, Garth Brooks, you know, even now. But I'm not going to say Veil of Tears unless it's a movie and it's really called for. It would take a lot. The situation would have to be, there almost would have to be a Veil of Tears for me to do it.
I think that you're becoming a singer opened up your songs in terms of subject matter, too. I mean, how many other singers would be willing to sing songs in the persona of a racist or of someone who's very insecure and unsure of themselves in the way that a lot of the characters in your songs are?
True. Actually, you know, there's more of it lately mm-hmm. than there ever has been. Alanis Morissette does it. You know, a lot of these great girl writers and are willing to admit to insecurities and bad behavior and with knowledge, you know, people write songs where they behave badly, you know, she's having my baby and things like that and don't realize it, you know. But if it's a conscious, artistic thing, you know, some of the rap, too, is that way. It's a very unusual, you're right, it's an unusual persona, to take on a persona that's less than heroic or admirable. But I'd started doing it in 65, and I still didn't think of myself as necessarily having a recording career. I'm so precise about this date because of this box that I can hear that Simon Smith was like the first song that I wrote that was a little, I believe, a little off-center. Maybe there's an earlier one. I don't know.
Well, I want to get to another song from the third CD of the box set. And again, this is the CD with the previously unreleased sessions and the demos. And a couple of the tracks from the CD are from a live album that was released, though I think it might not have been terrifically distributed. And the song I want to play is called Maybe I'm Doing It Wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a waltz about sex not quite measuring up to what it's supposed to be.
Or the individual not measuring.
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, both.
Yeah.
Insecure about his performance and about
the
response that he's getting in himself. So many pop songs are supposed to be sung in the voice of the seducer who's bragging about how good a lover he is.
Yeah.
Did you intend this to subvert that kind of song?
Yeah. And it's really a great idea because it's a widespread thing. You know, people don't necessarily talk about it. I mean, you have no idea from knowing a person, my experiences at least, that what they're like sexually or you can't even guess at that. That and money. You know, you can try and borrow $5 from someone you've known for 30 years and they won't give it to you. And it's a complete unknown. And I really liked, this song is short, but I always thought it was a great idea for a song, and you know, I wished I'd done more, but I couldn't think of what more to do.
Well, let's hear it. This is Maybe I'm Doing It Wrong.
Maybe I'm doing it wrong. Maybe I'm doing it wrong. Just don't move me the way that it should. Maybe I'm. I'm getting what everyone's getting. Maybe I'm doing it wrong. Sometimes I throw off a good one. At least I think it is. No, I know it is. I shouldn't be thinking at all. I shouldn't be thinking at all. Maybe I'm doing it wrong. Maybe I'm doing it wrong. Just don't move me the way that it should. Maybe I'm doing it wrong.
That's Maybe I'm Doing It Wrong from Randy Newman's 1971 album Live. It's included on his new box set, Guilty. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Randy Newman is my guest, and he has a new 4-CD box set called Guilty, 30 Years of Randy Newman. This is a really good season for you in the movies. You wrote the score for Pleasantville and for A Bug's Life, and I think you have one song in Babe, in the new Babe.
And one in You've Got Mail.
Wow, that's a lot.
It's a Randy Newman Christmas. Everybody gets to go. It's a Randy Newman Christmas. So go out and see the show.
Shows.
but I can't. I could. I'm not Stephen Sondheim. I'm not that strict, you know.
Yeah, well, it's funny that, you know, like Mr. Cynic, Randy Newman should have all these Christmas movies.
That wasn't bad.
That wasn't bad. That wasn't bad. Your next box set can include that outtake.
Yeah, the Randy Newman Christmas.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah. So I do think it's kind of funny that you of all people should have all these, like, Christmas movies now.
It is, but I mean, you know, I can do it. I mean, I can do the, my music has always been, I've always liked pretty music, sort of, and yet my literary sensibility is not, you know, the little match girl. So there's a bit of a dichotomy. So
you come from a film music extended family. Your uncles were Lionel and Alfred Newman,
and Emil Newman, the forgotten Newman.
And Alfred Newman was head of music for 20th Century Fox. Film scores include Grapes of Wrath, Hunchback of Notre Dame, Captain from Castile, All About Eve, Wuthering Heights. Did your uncles being in the film music business help you think about music as being part of storytelling?
Maybe. The first album sounded like I was trying very much to get things in the right place, to put people, the song Cowboy, you know, I didn't use a piano on it because it was an indoor instrument, and it used to be in movies you'd pay attention to stuff like that, where you don't want to hear. I didn't like it when I heard a piano outside somehow. It took me inside. Now they've done it so often that I don't think the convention necessarily holds anymore. But I think it probably did. I've never thought of it before, but yeah.
Did having them in the family prevent you from being willing to sell your soul in order to make it in Hollywood?
I never had a romantic view of Hollywood. And I never had, because, you know, the actors weren't around by the time they were working on the picture. And I would see that, you know, I'd hear them talk about this director, that actor, actress, and there was never any glamour to it for me particularly. I don't know. Maybe you sell your soul a little when you do a movie anyway, a movie music, but I don't feel that way. I think I've done some of my best work writing stuff that I never would have gotten to had not the movie dictated that I write something like that, like The Natural. I mean, I'm not going to write heroic music like that, I don't think. Or at least if I did, it would be very dissonant, I think. And I'm glad I got to it.
Well, I thought we could hear some of your new orchestral movie music. And this is not from the box set. This is from the CD of A Bug's Life. Mm-hmm. And you did the score for the movie. And I thought we'd play Victory. This is a really interesting piece. I don't know if you remember them by name or Mm-mm. not. Is that a no?
No, I don't remember them.
Well, why don't I play some of this, and then you could tell us a little bit about writing it and about how it's used in the actual movie.
Sure.
Music Randy Newman composed for the film A Bug's Life. Some of that really harkens back to classic adventure film scores.
Yeah, but it's 20th century. You know, I might not have known I could do that if had it not called for it. You know, it's a grasshopper flying through the air chasing an ant. But to me, it's. Oh, and that's exactly what, but it brought forth in me some sort of, you know, like Bartok on a bad day. At least, you know, it's sort of decent 20th century music and technically difficult and unbelievably well played by there's one crummy horn entrance kind of, but I mean, that's all right. And the, those musicians had that music. Maybe we did it in an hour and a half.
Wow.
That one thing. And that is really difficult for everybody, for the piccolo players, for the horn players, phenomenally difficult, for the trumpet players, sort of difficult, and the violin players, very, very, very difficult. It's an unbelievable orchestra that we have out here, and the best reading orchestra. There couldn't be a better one in the world. It's impossible. They sit down and they play that thing, and that's hard.
It must be pretty exciting for you to hear played what you've only heard in your head before.
Yep, it's about the best thing I do. I like it so much that I'm willing to put up with a lot of downside to that job to do that. Like I really liked hearing that just now. Listening to me sing is more important, you know, songs, I guess, and songwriting. But, you know, I don't know how loud this is in the movie, but it's not the main thing going on. I mean, whether the ant gets away is the main thing. But I like that.
It sounds really good to me.
Yeah, me too.
Randy Newman, thank you very much for talking with us.
Great pleasure, as always.
Randy Newman's new 4-CD box set, Guilty, is on Rhino Records.